Hello and welcome to another episode of Your Intention Matters, the podcast. My name is Still Paul Madat. Thanks very much for joining us today. Today I have Bill Ball. He is Director of Learning and Development over at DISIS in the nation's capital, Washington, D.C. Bill, welcome. How are things?
Thanks, Paul. Things are interesting given the state, but things are pretty great and moving along and trying to climb out of this situation like everybody is and figure it out together.
Interesting is a great word. I've been using unique to describe 2020 because it's pretty much the only PG word that I can really come up with, but interesting absolutely plays as well. And so, Bill, thanks for being here. Say hi to everybody and let's get into it.
I'm just super glad to be here. And as long as like we're not conversing like SDRs and starting our message off with, I understand these are unprecedented times, I think everybody's going to enjoy what we have to say today.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it as well. But I do want to start with 2020 because you talked about it being interesting. It's been anything probably what maybe you thought 2020 was going to be as we move into mid-August here. I mean, we're in the middle of Q3 for most people. And so, and you're also located in the DC area, which has been, obviously a lot of eyes on what's going on in the US and plus minus on what's happening there as well. And so talk to me, Bill, how's 2020 been for you? How are you doing? How's your team? How's the family? Other than maybe the inconvenience of having to work from home, how are you hanging in there?
You know, I want to tap on the work from home thing just really quickly. I think maybe like other people who in my role, I'm a bit of an extrovert. So finding the oxytocin in engaging with other people has become more of a deliberate practice because you're not bumping into people. I mean, my customers are all over the map in the United States and as well as in India and APAC. But I have salespeople and recruiters. My role is to enable all customer facing roles to thrive. So I've got a pretty diverse audience of types of people at DISIS, and just figuring out that like what's going to propel me while being isolated from everybody else, just like salespeople, has been one of the more interesting puzzles. My family thankfully is okay. We've had one person go all the way to like being in the hospital for a long time, but it was a happy ending. So I feel really lucky in all of this, but no, it hasn't gone as I planned. However, you know what? I was ready to pivot. I had plans, I had ideas, and I think that in some ways, I might've been ready to pivot faster than some of my customers and audience and my business. So finding sort of the right amount to change, because you got to change slowly to get anything absorbed, has been the interesting part. And then now thinking about, okay, now that everybody's had time to realize we may not be climbing out of this that quickly.
No.
What are the habits? You know, what's different about our buyer and our interactions? What's different about our salespeople and recruiters' operating rhythms that are going to continue on in next year that we want to focus on and better enable? So that's kind of what's going on with me.
Well, I appreciate your position on that. And I'm glad to hear that on the family side. While I'm sure it was a scary time in the moment, I'm glad to hear that whoever was impacted has come through, in the end, and it sounds like they're going to be okay. And so with that said, Bill, let's get into it then. So the title of the podcast, as you know, is called Your Intention Matters, and it's really built on my premise and belief that nothing is really given to any of us. Most of us have to fight and scratch and earn what we have, and most of us have meandering paths and careers and forks on the road, and yet we're all in the same boat. The only difference is the logo on the bag, and so I'm looking forward to you sharing your story. You ready to go here?
Let's do it.
All right. Let's go back a couple of years here. 96, James Madison University. I see here you have an English and creative writing background. So I'm fascinated to hear Do you recall at the time, do you remember, did you have a vision back then? Did you have a path that you thought you'd be doing, where you thought you might be in 2020? Or were you just kind of like, let's just get an education, we'll try and figure it out? Like, where were you at, call it 25 years ago?
So I'd say this comes from privilege, where I did have to finance some of my own education. I was lucky enough to have help from my family and my parents. And I was where I was truly lucky was I was the first of either of my parents to and the first of my siblings to finish college. So, unlike people who come out of a doctor, lawyer sort of education ingrained family, you know, where like, there's a predetermined mission for you at school. I think my parents were happy for me to go to school and figure it out, and they trusted me to do it. And I'm lucky for that. So it was a great, I grew up in a small town and, or a small city rather. And so it was great to just start improving on my cultural education and perspective. And that launched me into a number of things, including the thing, what I majored in. But at that time, Paul, honestly, all I wanted to do when I finished school was play in bands. I wasn't thinking about 2020. I was thinking about the club that I wanted to play at, or the song that I wanted to write, or who I wanted to be in a band with, or, you know, and how was I going to afford that, and what crummy day job was going to finance that.
So did you have a vision of a Grammy? Like, you were going to be up on stage accepting an award there? Is that what your vision?
Not quite that grand. And I mean that not like in a, you know, humble brag kind of way, but more in like, I did a lot of, I don't know, depending on what your perspective is on music, I'd say maybe the stuff that I made with different bands was more artsy than that. So the total audience probably would never have been great enough. It was never my vision to get on the radio. It was my vision to make records that people who liked records and liked music like mine would enjoy, and to be recognized by my peers and to perform on stage and to do awesome recordings. So it was like the action of the music, not necessarily like quite as much the ultimate achievement and reception.
So Bill, how did you find a career in sales? Did you raise your hand after you graduated? Did somebody kind of encourage you get into that industry or that field? How did it happen? And where'd you land in your first, I guess, professional selling job?
Sure. So I grew up with a father who was a traveling sales rep. And so he wasn't always around. And when he was, our phone, he worked for himself. So our phone always rang and it was always for him. So the whole like, you know, when cold calls were great, right? When nobody knew who it was and, oh my gosh, I got it was happening in any room in the house, it was always for my dad. It was a big sigh. You know, I was like, is this a friend of mine? And then I'd sigh, nope. And it was definitely for my dad. So when I finished school, he was like, hey, do you want to come work with me? And I was like, this is all I've heard the entire time I've grown up. So no, I don't.
Oh.
And again, I was lucky. That was my privilege. Like, so I went to go figure it out by myself and play in bands, like you said. I eventually got passionate about, because we're talking about the 90s and a few years after that, early 2000s, tech boom, all those things happening there. I got passionate about computers and I got passionate about technology. My roommates, mates and I, other than being bandmates, also like were the first people on our street to network our house. So learning about all that stuff was exciting for me. And I ended up in a Apple professional store before that these stores existed. I know that's probably
like a dealership type of retail location.
It was like an Apple consultant. So before they had the sort of the nice Gap looking stores in the mall, it was all independent Apple consultants that sold to businesses. Gotcha. And that kind of stuff. So I wandered into there one day. I met some people, I tried it out, and you know what, I had a little bit of natural ability. And sooner or later I was, you know, it was retail, so I had a lot of walk-in. But I started to expand my customer base to local businesses. I really enjoyed the relationships. I really enjoyed the consultative part of it. And I was like, you know what? Sales isn't bad if you can figure out where your passion is in it. So that is what, that's what sent me off in that trajectory.
Gotcha. And so you mentioned you kind of had an ability with it. Was it pretty easy transition for you? Did you find that you took to it right away, or was it like, nah, I don't really know. You might have a skill set with it, but did you love it right away?
I think I love connecting with people, right? So something that I've been, and not to make this a big topic, but something that I've been toying with, I was at a conference last year, and my friend Mark Crofton, who is global, I think he's global SVP of coaching, because they can have that at SAP. He talked about a term called cognitive empathy. And why it's important is it's about perspective taking. So one of the things that was such a fun challenge for me is like, okay, mid-40s, 50s housewife, I was 22 years old. How can I go share that perspective and get her talking casually with me and like form that relationship? That was super intriguing for me at that point. And I didn't realize how important it would be later on, right? That's the thing that automation can't do right now, right? It can't establish and do that perspective taking. So that's the thing that grabbed me at first. The other pieces, you know, I think the boss told me, hey, never say no to somebody or something that you can't do. I had a few bumps and bruises along the way, you know, like undersold something, discounted something too much, but no, it was, you know, at that point in time, I think I just got lucky. It wasn't just my talent. By knowing about technology, a lot of other people didn't know it quite as well. And that was a big boon for me to suddenly become a consultative expert for the mid-40s, 50s housewife, the teenager, the person going to college, et cetera.
And so how long were you in technology sales, and why did you leave that kind of that industry, so to speak?
Well, so this is a shame on me, because I wanted to move. I was living in Richmond, Virginia, which is the capital of Virginia at the time. It's a wonderful.
I think it is still the capital.
Town. Yeah. Sorry. Thank you. It's well said. I was living in Virginia or Richmond, and you know, it's a great town. I love it, and I have family there, and I still visit, but there just weren't a lot of upward opportunities out of retail sales for me at that time. So I wanted to move. I was looking, and guess what? My dad was still saying, hey, do you want to come work with me? Now that you like sales, hey, do you want to come work with me? So I put two and two together. I was like, all right, let's do that. And so I moved to DC, working with him, managing a territory of Delaware and Maryland and Northern Virginia, and calling on retail stores and a bunch of other stuff. And it was an amazing time, specifically because, my dad and I are alike personality wise, not in worldview. And it was just I'm so lucky to have had that experience, because it brought us so much closer together.
And what were you selling?
So we were manufacturers reps for a bunch of different international home furnishings companies.
Furnishings. So, wow.
Yeah. Like
a 180, if there ever was one. Wow.
Oh yeah. So then it was like, there was no technology. So that was a new challenge for me. I was like, I just have to relate to people, and I have to consult with them on like what they're using for their square footage. And like, that was a big shift, not just having people come inbound to me, because I still went out to businesses doing the Apple thing, but just, it was all outbound. So that was a huge, huge, like, I need to come up with my own fire every day and get out in the car, learning curve.
And so you working with your dad, was it what you thought it would be? Was it a good experience? Was it harder than you thought? Because, you know, your dad, so you're in his life and he's in your life. I got it. But it's very different than working together day in and day out. And so what was that like for you?
There are times when we would travel together and it would be like 6 p.m. at the hotel. And I don't know if you've ever drove around selling, but like, if you're the passenger in that car, there's so much fatigue that sets in. So I was just cooked. And he'd want to work out and plan the next day, and I would just be toast. And some snoring too, right? So you got to deal with that. But I think more importantly than that, it taught me how important relationships were to my dad. You know, as I grew up, I got to see him, you know, overachieve. I got to see him like, I mean, I can remember the years where like, he was like, this is the best year I've had. And this is how much money I've made. And like, he was super excited. It was like a major achievement. He, you know, at that point when I was coming up and working with him, he was more at the phase of like, I want to be remembered as a great partner. And so that's, you know, that took hold of me where I was like, I was, you know, just killing anything in my path when I was working for Apple. I mean, my customers didn't know that, but I was like competitive. I was, you know, all of the things that drive you as a young person in sales. Learning that from my dad was big. And yeah, it was hard. It was hard to motivate yourself to go be in DC traffic all day, calling on people that maybe wanted to see you or didn't see you. That was like my first brush with like real prospecting too, right? And it was knocking on doors. So like essentially in a lot of ways, so not easy.
Was it an easy conversation with him or was it challenging when you decided to move on?
It was an easy one. And the reason was it was getting close to 2008. So I did that for about 5 years. I'm a loyal person and I try to see things through. I'm not, you know, I probably should have been opportunistic here and there, maybe a little bit more, but both of us saw like economic shifts happening way before all of the financial crash did, and not because we were gurus, but we were just seeing it in our own industry as probably many other people did.
I bet.
So I knew like, hey, you know what? I really love technology. I want to get back to technology. So, you know, we had the discussion that I was going to start looking and start pivoting. And when I did, you know, we were both happy for me.
Was the process arduous to find Vorsight? Was it a long process to get in with them?
Yes, because they were, yes, yes. It was. They were an itty bitty company at the time. And like, you know, you didn't have to be so explicit on your website about what you did. And the idea, the big core thing with Vorsight is outsourced sales prospecting. And so we were SDRs before there was even anything known as SDRs. So it was even just figuring out the concept of their business that was intriguing to me.
So now how long were you with Vorsight?
9 years.
9 years. Okay, that's a long haul.
Yes.
That's a long run. And I get what you said about loyalty. And I know you probably had, my guess is in your 9 or 10 years there, more than one role, I imagine.
Yeah. So, I mean, not only did I have multiple roles, so I had to prove myself to be the SDR. But because I was a little bit more experienced than, you know, the person out of college these days that becomes an SDR, I moved into managing coaching SDRs. I was able to help scale that and the business with the owners of the business to start coach and direct managers and eventually move into what, you know, really was getting the light bulb going off for me every day, you know, and getting me out of bed, which was, you know, doing training, doing enablement, starting to figure those kinds of things out, you know, just having people, you know, working with people directly and having that change and have that impact their life. That's ultimately what it became to me at Vorsight. But there was a lot of role creation, small business, figure it out, all of those things along the way. And it was awesome to partner and grow in that business. And that's why I stayed there for so long.
You know, my background, Bill, as you may know this or may not, is I spent a lot of years at Xerox and I was in sales and sales management and sales training and enablement and so on. So I spent a lot of time actually in Leesburg, Virginia, which is where Xerox's main facility used to be at the time. And so I know that having experience in sales is one skill set. Having experience as a sales manager is another skill set. Having experience in as a sales trainer is a whole other ball game. And then when you lead enablement and sales, you know, learning and development and so on, they're just vastly different jobs. And some people can be great as a salesperson. Some people can be a great salesperson but a terrible manager. Can be a great manager and an average rep. And some people can be just a dynamic sales trainer and facilitator and person who can build a program but might have had average results as a sales professional directly. And so what was your transition like from SDR, individual contributor, into kind of program manager? And because you seem to be doing it for a while now, so you must have taken to it. But what was that like in terms of that transition?
The initial transition into manager, I think, you know, everybody recognized, my peers around me recognized my experience. So it was natural, but it was still, you know, that you were doing my same job yesterday thing. So understanding how to make that jump and understanding that everything that comes out of your mouth now is magnified by 1,000 by the people around you. So I struggled with all of those things, not so much the coaching, not so much identifying what helps people be successful, not so much with empathy, but just like learning how to be a leader, you know, like moving out of that rep role and learning how to be a leader and knowing when to sort of put your foot down and, you know, all of those basic things that take maturity too.
So what caused your departure from Voresight? Long time, almost 10 years, and a key part of your career. I mean, you're pretty much in your prime when you're going through this, and they gave you an opportunity to have a pretty good runway with your career. And so what was behind the decision to move on?
I was, again, very lucky and very fortunate to have, you know, had a hand in crafting a business and building it up and helping sister businesses with Voresight grow along the way. I was most fortunate to find my practice in sales enablement there and realize, okay, so, you know, I understand how salespeople operate. I understand how coaching works. You know, now I'm doing facilitating and training, but how can I affect this globally? And Voresight was an amazing small business. Its sister business, Exec Vision, also an amazing small business. I wanted to go to a larger company, bar none, and just scale my practice. I had found, like, I'm doing what I want to do, Paul. I found it. I just want to continue scaling my practice, and that's what prompted that move.
And so was that a long process for you to find? So I'm sure at some point on one day you make the decision mentally, okay, I'm going to start looking. I've made the decision. I'm going to move on here. The process with Dices, was it like the previous ones? Was it a long process? Did they find you, and how did it happen?
So it was interesting that, you know, I started realizing, okay, I need to start exploring what's out there, right? I learned a ton at Voresight, and at the time, you know, they were prospecting innovators. So it was great to be in walls every day that contain knowledge. But the sooner I realized, like, not only do I have these, you know, the knowledge within these walls, but I need to network more. I need to meet more people. And as I started to incorporate some of those things, I said, okay, I need to expand my scope. So I started interviewing just to check it out and entertain it. And some of the situations were just crazy because I'm in this field called sales enablement that was defined by Forrester in 2009. And I think Gartner defined it again, like, you know, a few years ago. It's like they got a man on the moon in a shorter amount of time. So the types, when you start interviewing for these sales enablement positions, it's like, you have to decode what they're looking for. I had a trial by fire in front of 9 people for a sales enablement role, you know, for like a mid-sized business. And I was like, wow, this is kind of big theater, but like half the people didn't even understand the job.
Yeah.
You know, so it was just, it was a great sort of experience. But getting to Dices, what made that go? It was a totally new industry for me. So Dices does staffing, IT and non-IT, and then managed services like automation and so forth. What made that happen is very simple. I had an interview with my boss. I was a referral from another friend of mine who I'd met through networking. He was like, hey, you know, I've got something, you know, are you interested? I had an interview with my boss. It was Paul. It was a conversation. And it's just so great when it's a conversation and it's not like star questions and all that qualification stuff is important.
Let me get my list of questions here. Exactly.
Tell me about a time when, and then give me all of the data points. Like, that's important and you need to have that in there. But like, if that's all it is, like, how does the candidate have chemistry with you? Yeah. So my boss, my current boss and I had great chemistry. And that helped me get over that hump. It was really hard to move away from a business that I was loyal to and that helped me grow for 9 years. So just, it was the hardest thing making the jump, not seeing that it was the right opportunity.
Bill, that's a pretty impressive life that you've created for yourself, an impressive career, meandering path. You know, you have a vision of, you know, rocking out, and then you find technology, you get into sales. your dad sells you on working with him, and you do that for a period of time, and you realize, okay, I want something bigger. You go through a significant process just to get in with Vorsight. You finally get in. You're 10 years there, which in itself is unique even by today's standards. There doesn't seem to be the same level of loyalty on either side today. A lot of employees will move on after a few years. Employees don't seem to have the same loyalty to employers to employees. And then you realize, okay, I want to do something even bigger. And then you find Dysys, and here you are, and appreciate that the last 5 or 6 months have really been anything what you thought it would be, but you're coming up on almost 3 years. So that tells me that you've been able to find your way and establish the traction you want there as well. So congrats on what you've been able to create up until this point in your life.
Thanks so much.
Yeah.
It's iteration.
Yeah,
like that's the best way I could sum it up for you, Paul, is awareness and iteration and getting old and recognizing, you know, lessons learned.
So, Bill, I always like to ask anybody who comes on, I haven't prepped you on this, of course, but if you had any advice for anybody listening, it doesn't have to be sales advice, doesn't have to be anything, just any, if it was one piece of advice that's worked for you, that if you knew the audience was listening, anything come to mind that you might want to share?
I mean, there's a lot of lessons learned in sales enablement. And given that's my current field, maybe that's where I want to play this. I think that, you know, in the department that I took over at Dysys, my title's learning and development, and it's in a traditional kind of title. They knew they were getting an enablement person when I came in, and that's fine.
Yeah.
The department before me, and I was actually having a discussion with one of our leaders today about this, the department before me was more of a on order learning and development. Hey, we're having trouble with objection handling. Can you cook up something for that? And then it got delivered, and then we move on to the next thing. To truly elevate the function, you've got to align with the business leaders. So the first thing that I did was look at data, talk to people, talk to reps, try to get a picture of what's going on. Because if you just ask, you know, there's a Henry Ford quote. If I asked my customer what they wanted, they would have asked for a faster horse.
So true.
So if you're an on order help desk, it's just really hard to grow beyond that and to serve people in a meaningful way and be partners. So I came in to be a partner. And so I work with all of the leaders as partners, and it's partly, you know, identifying gaps and that kind of thing, but then making suggestions, not saying, okay, what do you guys need? It's making the suggestions. And then lastly, making a few different suggestions so they have a choice. So like, even if one of the choices isn't your favorite choice, it gives them something to yell at, and then, and gives them something to say, okay, I've got a choice in this process, because humans love choice, and doing that together. So everything that I do with people, not to people.
Well, Bill, I think that's great advice and great commentary. And I have to say, I've enjoyed speaking with you. Thanks so much for allocating the time to be here.
Paul, I can't thank you enough. This has been the best part of my day. And I hope the audience gets something valuable out of the conversation. It's been a fun journey.
And I have that on tape. It was the best part of his day. So that's I'll take it. I'll absolutely take it. So, Bill, let's wrap this one up right now. Thanks again for being here. And everybody, thanks so much again for taking the time to listen. Remember that your intention matters, because that's the result you'll tend to get. We're out of here, and we'll do it again next week. Be safe, everyone.